Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. A dangerous play. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
In January 1955, a retired Navy physician and current San Francisco biologist named Albert R. Banky Jr. approached Lou Spadia, the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, not as a fan, which he was, but as a scientist. He asked the manager one simple question: if any of his players would like to participate in a science experiment at an atomic research lab. Banky was not only an experimental scientist, but like I said, a huge fan of football, and calmly explained to Spadia that it wouldn't take much of their time. He simply wanted to put some radioactive material inside of the athletes, and then examine them. The result, while good-intentioned, would, as you might imagine, be an epic scientific failure, or maybe mystery, one so potentially dangerous and ridiculous that here we are doing a whole episode about it. Today, the proposed radioactive experiments of Albert R. Banky on the famed San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers at this time were a relatively new team and had just finished their fifth season in the NFL. And though they were, by all accounts, not a winning team, they did bring some magic to the game and were, according to many, a team to watch. Probably most noteworthy, the 49ers' Joe Perry had just been named the league's first black MVP. The team felt good and wanted to be seen and had a lot of talent. Perry, Hugh the King McElhenney, John Henry Johnson, and Y.A. Tittle would all eventually be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So the team, while, again, not impressing many with their wins, knew they had something special. Banky pitched Spadia the importance of the experiment and how the information might actually help the team or give them more insight into physiologically how these men worked. Despite the use of the word radioactivity, that idea sounded good to pretty much everyone, and within a couple of weeks, Banky had arranged for the 49ers to be subjects in a, quote, nuclear medicine experiment, which is what one of Banky's colleagues at UC Berkeley would later write about the whole process. Banky himself was fairly well known, having made headlines a couple years earlier when he helmed another bizarre, and should I add, failed experiment he conducted, feeding sailors in the Pacific, quote, large quantities of garlic in order to ward off mosquitoes. But beyond this, Banky was kind of a legend, known as the, quote, modern-day father of human body composition for his work developing a method of measuring body density, in which he analyzed the physiques of pro football players, yes, among other people. Banky's work in that respect was incredibly successful. This experiment would be another story. It would all go down at the U.S. Naval Radiological Defense Laboratory, a specialized, quote, atomic defense outfit at a naval shipyard in San Francisco from 1946 to 1969. While the 49ers were the most high-profile guinea pigs in the whole racket, they were not alone. For decades, participating scientists exposed over 1,000 people to concerning doses of radiation at the lab. Banky had another curiosity when it pertained to the experiment. He wanted to know which 49er would most likely survive a nuclear attack. Yes, you heard me right. As a U.S. Department of Energy researcher summarized years later, Banky's research also concerned a kind of post-nuclear thunderdome, a dystopic scenario, his interest revolving around assessing, quote, athletes and the physically fit in order to determine probable survival in the case of nuclear war. It was very mid-century of him, of course, very Cold War America, but also he had personal interests in this subject. Banky loved football, sports, and was a natural muscular athlete himself, playing football at his alma mater, Whittier College in California. From there, he went to Harvard to study applied physiology and then to the Navy, exploring his lifelong interest in deep sea diving, where he covered medical watch on USS Ortolian, a submarine rescue ship, and performed hard hat dives, which, if you don't know exactly what that means, it's where divers get into that huge steel diving suit that looks more like a space suit than something you'd wield in the depths of the ocean. This is all to say that he was a man of athleticism, of survival, of extremes, and continued to be that way decades after his retirement from the Navy, when he became a professor of preventative medicine at the University of California and director of the Institute of Applied Biology at the Presbyterian Medical Center, San Francisco. After his post at the Presbyterian Medical Center, his interest in survival ramped up quite a bit when the center sent him to study severe malnourishment in post-war Germany. This experience profoundly affected Banke, who would study human physiology and how to maintain health and vitality under extreme circumstances for the rest of his life. As a note, Banke was obsessed with survival both in his professional life and his personal life. Before seatbelts were a thing, Banke lined the back of his family car with styrofoam blocks covered in fabric, providing some protection in case, or what he thought was an inevitable, collision. Banke became affiliated with the Navy's dedicated atomic research lab in 1953, acting as the lab's top physician and, quote, radiological medical director. There, Banke continued researching physiology, but with a new toy, nuclear medicine. More after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello. How's it going out there?
We're checking in with you.
This is what it is. This is what we say it is, and that is what it is.
And we always, you know, it's like, oh, we hope this email finds you well. Well, we hope this check-in finds you well.
Absolutely. And we mean it, unlike most emails.
Yeah. I never want the email to find me.
No, at all. I've already lost when the email finds me.
Yeah. I'm already long. I'm long gone. Where were you when I needed you, email?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to find our government. Well, of course.
Absolutely.
Ghost town government. Those mayors, we need you in tip-top shape, mentally and physically. Mostly just physically, because, you know what I mean? Like, we're in L.A., baby.
Yeah.
It's all
Who's
about the
mentally
appearance.
Okay, also?
Yeah. <it's> a,
we don't have any metrics to go by.
Yeah. So we'll just take physically. Mentally is just a bonus. Oh, these mayors did a little experimentation, too.
Oh, did they?
Passed.
Wow. Yeah.
This first mayor?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty recently, actually.
Wow.
Pretty scandalous.
Tell me about it.
Made a radioactive pickleball.
Whoa.
Couldn't even tell you what one looks like. I mean, I'm sure it looks like a little ball, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's not the paddle or the cord. It's just the ball. So it's just like a rubber ball that you want to stay away from.
But people can't stay away from it. That's the problem. They're,
okay.
People are like, oh, hey, you want to play some pickleball? It's like, yeah, P.S., the ball is radioactive. They're like, listen, if we have the court open, we're using it. Mm-hmm. We don't care. We'll die soon.
Hard whatever. To get those courts. That's true.
That's what I've heard about. It's all I know about it is it's hard to get courts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
This mayor messed around with a radioactive bocce ball.
Heavier.
gotcha bocce. So that's a wood round wood ball that you hit with like a club, right?
No, bocce ball you handle it with your hand. So that's very dangerous.
You throw it against another ball.
Yes.
Right, got it.
Mm-hmm.
This is some real white people stuff.
This
we're
is. We're getting to the weeds here.
The fact that you knew that, right? You were like, that is not bocce. No.
Well, I often mistake it for croquet, which I think is what you're thinking of. Yeah.
That's probably
we're
what
whites.
I was thinking
we're
of.
Whites. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Kat Jozell's messing around with that.
Hello.
Don't know why.
Very, very
Where
dangerous.
Are you getting all the plutonium?
I wouldn't suggest
Where
it.
Are you getting...
I'm not a doctor, but I think that's bad.
This mayor goes a little old school. Classic. Messing around with a nuclear pinball.
Right?
A pinball machine. Don't know how you got the... I don't know where you're getting the materials to make these balls nuclear. How are you getting it inside the pinball machine? Like a Rolling Stones pinball machine, man.
I was thinking like more like a Ghostbusters or a... maybe a sexier one, too. Like a...
Oh, yeah.
Tales from the
Video
Crypt.
Vixen.
Yeah.
Woman on motorcycle. That is still could be Ghostbusters, and that could be Rolling Stones.
Absolutely.
Don't know. They put a hot girl on a motorcycle in any
show. I mean, honestly, the least sexy one is the Playboy one. It's Hugh Hefner,
like,
all of
it. In a chair. They're just like, I don't know, I'm at a desk chair. Leave me alone. Well, messing around with the nuclear pinball would be Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
This mayor also is pretty classic. Messing around with a bowling ball, nuclear bowling ball, which probably came nuclear.
Yeah.
I don't know what they used to make.
You picked a cool color and you sealed your fate.
Yeah, you were like, this is a weird color. Why is it glowing? Sounds good to me.
Like,
no, it's
cool.
Nuclear. It already had asbestos in it,
yeah.
Probably.
Everything like stinks. Everything stinks and it glows in there. Everything's weird.
And you're just sticking your fingies in there?
You don't know where they stop. They never stop. You don't know how far those fingy holes go.
I know you like the word fingies.
I do.
That's a U-coded word.
Truly.
Couldn't help myself. Well, messing around with those fingy holes would be Casey Weber.
Hello.
This mayor's messing around with a classic. If you got bullied, you got hit in the head with one of these, make it nuclear, it's going to get a lot worse for you. A red rubber dodgeball. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
And hitting directly in the head with one of those?
They were
me?
More painful if they were less deflated, which is the weird part.
Well, messing around with those nuclear dodgeballs would be Matthew Clemenz Leray.
Hello.
This mayor gets pretty aggressive with their nuclear ball usage. I don't know if you've ever been on the, I don't know what you'd call it, the paintball field, but those things hurt. They don't feel good. Why? Stop shooting me. Why is it my gun keeps jamming? Please stop shooting me. For the one bachelor party I went to in Canada,
when
they were all just shooting me and it's cold.
Don't you have like bales of hay? Aren't there things to hide behind? It's like an obstacle
course.
Yeah,
they fight at me and the gun keeps jamming and then I keep getting hit with these paintballs. They hurt. Stop shooting me. Leave me alone.
Leave me in peace.
Not even
in
close.
Field.
I'm not even close with the people here. Why am I even here? Well, making a nuclear paintball. Very forward thinking would be Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
Do you remember those? I don't know if they would be. I'd see them in Chinatown and stuff like that. They'd be two silver balls that you kind of roll in your hand around, like it's you know, it's a relaxing or whatever it is. I don't know what those balls. They're silver balls. I remember getting some in Chinatown.
Yes, with like the finger traps and there's a little hand
stuff like that. Yeah,
activities.
It's like two. It came with like two metal silver balls. It's supposed to be relaxing. Make them nuclear.
Not relaxing.
It's not so relaxing anymore. Gotcha.
That's the opposite. I would say I'm not a doctor.
But use the word fingies.
To use the technical term, fingies.
That would be our mayor, Chris Hernandez.
Hello.
And then our governor. Where do you think the plutonium comes from? Where do you think it's getting sourced from? Who could possibly get their hands on some nuclear product? I wonder, who could it be? Who would have the power? Yeah, our governor would. Where does she get it? Good question.
She has her sources.
She has her sources, and there's not enough NDAs around.
She's everywhere. There's nothing she can't get. This is easy for her.
I'm surprised she hasn't sent us one. I'm surprised she hasn't sent us one yet.
I'm surprised she hasn't been offended because she's been doing a lot of overlording in our breaks.
It's coming from two people that use the word fingies.
Yeah,
and
so
blushy, you know, so
we're not on her radar. She's got way cooler things to talk about.
Yeah,
no,
we're not real serious people. Well, if you want to get your hands on some plutonium, get your checkbook out, and good luck, because that would be our governor.
Avian Noble.
If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episode, 7 days free, you want to skip over this junk?
And you do.
And support us for two lousy dollars?
Yeah.
Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You want to get back into it?
Let's do it.
Dr. Albert Behnke had somehow convinced the San Francisco 49ers to enroll in a dystopic experiment in radioactivity called, a bit more benignly, but also not really, nuclear medicine. Now, radiology is, of course, a common diagnostic tool we use today, but it's a delicate practice. The body needs to absorb just enough of a radioactive isotope of an element, say hydrogen and water or potassium, to literally light it up, giving important information from within, of course, used in medical diagnoses and monitoring. Even back then, radiation doses were very low. According to the lab's Atomic Energy Commission materials licenses, via a very informative defector article by Chris Roberts about the subject, someone drinking titrated water and receiving injections of radioactive chromium, as Behnke proposed for the 49ers, quote, special examinations, might absorb a dose of between 0.01 to 0.2 REM per procedure, just a fraction of what radiations Americans are exposed to annually from their average environments. This is all to say that the treatment that Behnke was going to give these football players was not that extreme and kind of an arbitrary measurement, one that who knows would actually get results. On January 10, 1955, Behnke enlisted UC Berkeley's Bill Seary, a collaborator on many of Behnke's experiments, to help with the trial run of the experiment with some of the football players. Quote, "We are ready to take on the 49ers anytime at your and their convenience," Seary wrote Behnke on January 12th. According to Roberts in his defector piece, quote, "There were some details to iron out, exactly what Behnke wanted measured, how much the lab should offer the 49ers in terms of compensation, but it was clear working with the NFL team was an exciting prospect. Quote, I sincerely hope you can persuade as many of these men as possible to participate in the program, Seary added. For our purposes, they are an extremely important group. But then, after this correspondence, the experiment completely fell apart. Or it might have never happened. Or it did happen and was not documented whatsoever. Despite an era utilizing lots of forms of documentation, voice recording, paperwork, many, many scientists will never really know what happened, or the evidence has been lost to history. Neither Behnke nor Seary ever published anything specifically related to the 49ers' participation in this experiment. The DOE noted some, quote, references to professional football players in a few journal articles, which could have been Behnke's earlier work on physiology or this particular experiment. Additionally, no final reports ever emerged during a government-wide search specifically looking for the results of this experiment in the early and mid-1990s. Unfortunately, Behnke died on January 16, 1992, 2 years before a Department of Energy researcher was trying to gather materials on this subject. They were, however, able to contact Seary in 1994. Seary, 75 at the time, didn't remember anything about the experiment whatsoever. To help remind him, the researcher sent him copies of his 40-year-old letters to Behnke. Seary found them, quote, interesting, but still remembered nothing. Quote, it was so long ago and so many studies were done, he said. Then the researcher connected with a man named Ed Alpin, who worked directly under Behnke while at the Navy lab. Even better, Alpin was slightly younger, a Guggenheim fellow, directed a U.S. National Laboratory, and held professorships at UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco. He was sure to remember the experiments, right? Well, Alpin, quote, knows the experiments took place because he was in the room when they were done. But also, according to Alpin, the 49ers took their radioactive doses at Seary's lab, but then went to Behnke's own lab for, quote, the weighing portions of the experiment, which Alpin was not a part of. Defector's Chris Roberts, who I've mentioned a couple times and did an incredible job researching this subject, has his own theory that Behnke did conduct the experiment, he just didn't like the results. After theoretically learning maybe mind-blowing information from the 49ers, Behnke delivered a lecture on nuclear war survival in June of 1958 and doesn't reference them or the experiment at all. This, to me, is telling. In his lecture, he was pessimistic about Americans' chances for success in a nuclear situation, which, again, seems to reflect poorly on the experiment, if it happened at all. According to Roberts, quote, Behnke bemoaned how the country's runaway economic success and high standard of living has created a class of idlers, alcoholics, and the chronically ill, all reliant on others. They would be terrible burdens in an attack scenario, in his view, when any atomic survivors would have to seek refuge in underground shelters for long periods of time. They would have to exit and walk long distances to find food and water to sustain them, avoiding or surviving hazards like fallout along the way. To maintain order and morale, they would have to possess a focus bordering on religious zealotry. In fact, about the only group of Americans Behnke felt stood a chance in this whole nuclear apocalypse were the self-sufficient, devout, and teetotaling Mormons. As for the rest of us, not only did most Americans lack the physical capabilities for these labors, they didn't give a shit. This is again a quote from Roberts' piece. Despite clear and consistent warnings of looming atomic disaster, a quote, national lethargy and indifference in defense matters has affected the country, with overconfidence, defeatism, and blatant selfishness overriding any survival impetus, he warned. For Roberts and myself, again, it makes it seem like this experiment didn't go the way that Behnke wanted, or he would have been reporting those data points versus this diatribe on how Americans would be bad at survival in a post-nuclear fallout. But again, the experiment could happen, could have not happened, or somewhere in between. For some experts, the experiment definitely happened, as they believe the nuclear era of experimentation of the time demonstrates how the San Francisco lab operated pretty outrageously, with its own methods of wanton and reckless experimentation that bordered on irresponsible. Quote, here's a laboratory that acted more like it was searching for things to try, rather than being driven by things that made a lot of sense and were worth the risk, said Daniel Hirsch, the retired director of the Program on Environmental and Nuclear Policy at the University of California, Santa Cruz, who has extensively researched the Hunters Point Shipyard and the Radiation Lab, located there from, again, 1946 until 1969. At least once, Pentagon officials intervened, stopping the lab from experimenting on more humans. An example of this is the spring of 1959, when the lab requested authorization to expand the scope of one of Behnke's tracer studies to 100 people, including, quote, volunteer patients in convalescence at the Oak Knoll Naval Hospital in Oakland. Quote, this bureau cannot recommend approval of the request to use volunteer patients at the U.S. Naval Hospital, Oakland, California, until such time as the commanding officer and director, U.S. Naval Radiological Defense Laboratory, and the commanding officer, U.S. Naval Hospital, Oakland, California, shall jointly submit justification for utilization of volunteer patients, read a July 28, 1959 memo addressed to Navy Secretary William Franke. There is no sign that the lab tried again to work with radiation, and the whole enterprise shut down in 1969, sparing more from being subjected to extraneous experimentation, voluntary or not, including, hopefully, some very lucky, soon-to-be football Hall of Famers.